Welcome back for the second hour of Issues, Etc. David Van Beem of Time Magazine will join us here in just a moment. We're going to be talking with him about the controversy surrounding Christian aid groups in Iraq. They're planning to go in to bring in humanitarian aid. They're not the only ones who are bringing in humanitarian aid. But the controversy has to do with the message, perhaps, that they plan to bring as well. And, of course, one of these groups, Samaritan's Purse, is run by Franklin Graham, who after September 11th had a few things to say about Islam that is raising the hackles and the eyebrows of some. In addition to that, there's a story I'd like to share with you after we're done with David Van Beema. We will get Pastor Matt Harrison's reaction from LCMS World Relief to the whole situation as well. But there's a story about Franklin Graham being invited this week to go and, well, they say preach, but I think what they're talking about is be involved with prayers at the Pentagon, and some of the Muslim Pentagon employees are complaining about that particular situation, given the fact that Franklin Graham has a bit of a history in the press regarding the subject of Islam. David Van Beema is senior writer for Time magazine. He's author of a story in the latest issue of Time called Christian Aid, a Faith-Based Initiative. David, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks so much, Seth.
Tell us about these Christian humanitarian groups, or Christian faith-based humanitarian groups. What are their basic plans regarding Iraq?
Well, I think that there's a wide variety of Christian groups going in there. And we focused most on the two that have attracted the most attention, who are the International Missions Board of the Southern Baptist Convention and Franklin Graham Samaritan's Purse Organization. But, you know, they run the Christian groups, as ever in these sorts of situations, run the gamut from organizations like Catholic Relief, I assume, is in there, and others from what might be called the non-evangelical part of the spectrum through the evangelical part of the spectrum. So a whole bunch of different people with different methods are going in.
And we're talking about groups who bring in food relief, water, help restore some kind of community help and things like that?
Yeah, and medicine as well.
All right. Why does Samaritan's Purse, let's begin with Franklin Graham's organization, why does it in particular attract everyone's attention in this regard?
I think the reason that Samaritan's Purse attracted attention was because people were aware of Franklin Graham's statements about Islam. And then people naturally were curious about to what extent he would be, how bold he would be in bringing the gospel at the same time that he was bringing aid. And the same thing applies actually to the SBC.
Now, the other organization you mentioned, the International Missions Board for the Southern Baptist Convention, is the basic. They haven't made any real bold statements about Islam since September 11th that anybody knows about. What's the basic concern there? The evangelism concern?
No, I think. Well, in both cases, there are two issues, and I think that they tend to reflect. Or not reflect, they tend to amplify one another. I mean, in both these cases, in the case of Franklin Graham, he's the head of the organization, so when he speaks, you know, I think one can assume that in some ways that he's speaking for Samaritan's Purse, although I'm sure Samaritan's Purse doesn't have an official position on Islam. And as regards the Southern Baptist Convention, various statements have been made by various prominent Southern Baptists at various times, including Jerry Vines, who was at one point the president of the convention, and both of these groups, to one extent or another, are intending or seem to be intending, at least as, and I assume that they're still doing it. Although it seems as though Graham has become more discreet, perhaps, about doing it, to bring a gospel message at the same time that they are bringing in aid. In the case of the Baptists, it's very straightforward. As far as I know, all that they're doing is on their 70-pound food packages that they're bringing in. They're putting some scripture. They're putting John 1:17, for the law was given through Moses, grace and truth were realized through Jesus Christ. In the case of Franklin, Franklin Graham, it's a little bit difficult to figure out exactly what he was doing or intended to do, and indeed last week when we were writing the story, Samaritan's Purse had up on its website that it was preparing to help, you know, quote, thousands of suffering families in the name of Jesus Christ. And as of last Monday, they dropped in the name of Jesus Christ. So it's difficult to tell precisely where they are at the moment.
Does that appear to you to be, at least in some way, a capitulation to the sensitivity that people have about bringing a gospel or evangelism message along with the humanitarian aid?
It would be difficult. I'm not trying to play fancy with you here. It would be difficult to speculate exactly. He could best answer that question. It seems possible that he's said that there are times when the best thing that you can do is just offer somebody a cup of water. And if that truly is the way he feels, and if he feels that that's one of these times, then maybe he felt that it was not going to be helpful to seem as though you were sort of going to go in there with gospel guns blazing. But I can't read his mind.
How, in the evangelical community in particular, how do they fall down upon this issue of, do we go in only with the cup of cold water or the food or the medicine and leave the gospel message unspoken, or do we have to do both at the same time? Where do they seem to fall out on
they,
that?
They feel that, they feel, I think there was a, we quoted a poll that was done by BeliefNet and Center for Ethics and Public Policy, I think it was, Ethics and Public Policy Center, that 89% of evangelical leaders, in any case, thought it was, quote, very important to, quote, insist on the truth of the gospel to Muslims. So I think that most conservative Christians would be in favor of his going in there strong.
And the Islamic community, in particular here in the West, in America, what has their general reaction been?
We talked to somebody who is generally quoted as a spokesman. I think it's difficult I wouldn't want to go so far as to say that he represents everybody, but he was not happy and about it, and thought that Christians were trying to take advantage of people at their weakest moment and basically offering a sort of Franklin has said on many occasions, and I think that he must be believed on this, that he would never, you know, for a moment think of not giving aid to somebody who said that he was a Muslim as opposed to a Christian. But that's not really the point. I think what the guy was complaining about was that when somebody is, you know, is handing you food and giving you a gospel message at the same time, there's sort of a feeling that you maybe ought to go along.
So there's a potential for what someone might at least interpret as coercion here.
Yeah, I mean, clearly not the sort of coercion that has historically occurred between religions at the point of a sword, but a kind of a suggestion of a preference on the part of the person who holds the top end of the power relationship.
David Van Bima, thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, thanks for having me.
David Van Bima is senior writer for Time magazine, and he's author of a story in the latest issue of Time titled Christian Aid, a Faith-Based Initiative. You can read David's story on the internet at time.com. That's time.com. We're joined now by Pastor Matt Harrison, and we're going to get his reaction as well. He joins us here in just a few minutes. And by the way, when we're done with Pastor Harrison, I'd like your reaction to this. What do you think about Christian aid groups who have a primary function? Samaritan's Purse is the primary example here, whose function here is to more or less deal with the human needs, the physical needs, the medical needs of people who are in dire circumstances. The Iraqis qualify in spades. These are people who need basic things like water and food and medicine and blankets and perhaps heaters and perhaps anything else that we could bring them. Now, as we are going over there doing this humanitarian work, is it incumbent upon a Christian group to not withhold the gospel, to hold out the water, the food, but also to speak the gospel clearly, even if it means that people might interpret it to be coercive? In other words, look, I'm going to give you this water anyway, but the Muslim might think that he's got to listen to the gospel message, or he's got to say something nice about Jesus, or even make a decision for Jesus, become a Christian or profess to be a Christian in order to get the aid. Pastor Matt Harrison is Executive Director of LCMS World Relief and Human Care. He joins us now. Matt, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Great to be with you.
How do you respond to the potential for what has been called coercion when it comes to Christians going into places like Iraq with medicine and food and water, but also the gospel message?
It's a multifaceted problem. I think that the church is free to do a number of things and also operates within certain categories. We in the LCMS do this regularly. We provide funding through our missionaries specifically when the missionaries see intense need on the field and they need some dollars to address those needs within the context of their mission, also reaching out in love to people in need. We're able to provide those funds, so you have mercy and care connected directly with proclamation. On the other hand, the church is really, as it were, sort of a corporate citizen. And I think just as it's quite appropriate for an individual Christian to give money to, say, the Red Cross or other secular efforts at helping people in need, it's not improper for the church to join in efforts, often with other Christians, efforts in meeting the need of people which are not expressly evangelistic. And I think churchly wisdom is the important thing here. It would seem to me to come on strong right now with the gospel in Iraq would only harm in the long run, potentially harm in the long run, the possibility of a democratic life and a more open society opening up in the Mideast, and therefore jeopardize the very thing that evangelical Christians are interested in, being able to raise up more Christians in that area. Now, I say that the LCMS does partner with Lutheran World Relief Baltimore, and through LWR Baltimore, we are providing funding, especially for aid through 30 or 50 Christian churches which are currently in Iraq. So that's happening.
All right. I think there's a concern of a kind of a bait-and-switch concern.
Right, absolutely.
And that is that Christians are going in, their agenda, with all the negative connotations that carries, their agenda is to proselytize,
mm-hmm.
but they'll use the carrot of aid there. Is this a legitimate concern?
I think it is a real legitimate concern. I think Christians should avoid it at all costs. I think as Christians, we are concerned about people because people are valuable and precious to God in time and for eternity. And so when a Christian sees a neighbor or a person in need physically or spiritually, the Christian will be concerned. I think the Christian simply acts in love. Faith is a living, mighty, active thing, as Luther said. And when we see somebody in trouble, we act. And I don't think we should act. We should be straight up about who we are and why we're there and what we expect. That's why I think it's totally inappropriate. Would be totally inappropriate to demand some kind of confession or conversion or some kind of stipulation to receive aid.
So if we're looking at this as a long-term problem, Matt,
mm-hmm.
Iraq in particular, Christian aid groups, are you advocating a strategy of basically let's feed the people first and take care of all those needs, and then as that aid takes root and gives rise to a freer system, a freer government, then the opportunity to preach the gospel will really be presented to us?
I think that is probably the wisest approach to take.
There's another issue here, and that has to do with the public statements of both president of president of Samaritan's Purse, Franklin Graham,
mm-hmm.
in which he said, just among other things, that Islam was a very evil and wicked religion. And then,
mm-hmm.
of course, not the International Missions Board for the Southern Baptist Convention, but at a recent Southern Baptist Convention held here in St. Louis at one of their
mm-hmm.
Gatherings, the Reverend Jerry Vines had similar things to say publicly
mm-hmm.
about Islam. How does that complicate this situation?
Well, it becomes very complicated, I think, because those statements, which I think are intensely theological statements, I think we too, in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, if you take the Bible seriously, you have to confess that there's no salvation outside of Christ. There's no other name given among men by which we must be saved, Acts 4:12, and no man comes to the Father but by me, and many, many other passages. And so within that context, we would have to say that I think theologically those statements are not incorrect. However, because of the lack of the ability of the general public to understand those statements, and also to the propensity to mix the two kingdoms, immediately such statements become incredibly inflammatory and very unhelpful. So I think one needs to be very careful in this realm. As a Lutheran Christian, I can say, to the extent that Islam causes order, keeps society decent, and keeps looting from happening and those kind of things, we support, on the civil realm, we support that kind of, we support Islam to the extent it causes decency in society, in the civil realm.
In this Time magazine piece that we were talking with Van Bima about, Ibrahim Hooper of the Council on American Islamic Relations says that the two groups, Samaritan's Purse and the International Missions Board for the Southern Baptist Convention, are, quote, seeking to exploit people in their moment of vulnerability. Do you believe that to be true?
I don't know. In listening to your previous interview, I really think that's a harsh judgment. If that judgment is made upon Christians who simply have a desire to assist people in love physically and also a desire for giving them the gospel of Christ, I think that would be a and if there's fundamental opposition to that, which I suspect that statement is born of that opposition, I think it's an unfair characterization. But that being said, I think we really need to be careful. And I think really the best thing for Christians to do in this circumstance, and Christian denominations, is to, if they want to offer aid, not hide who we are, but offer aid and look for opportunities for mission which are legitimate in the future, especially mission opportunities which are based upon indigenous peoples and people groups who are already Christians.
What does this whole situation say about the power and the scandal, the stumbling block of the gospel?
It is a stumbling block, and it always will be. And I think, given that reality, we should not be quick to judge others in these areas. I think, we Christians must be wise about the way we talk in the public. We should always be honest and forthright, honest about salvation only in Christ, as the Bible teaches. We should also be honest and simply love our neighbor because our neighbor is in need. And so it's a challenging day, especially when there's so much information available. People can go to our website in a moment and find out our fundamental convictions and belief on the necessity of proclamation and those kind of things. So It's a complex world, and I think the fundamental reality is we must operate with integrity, be honest.
There are those who would argue from a situation like this that this extraordinary situation of bringing aid to the Iraqi people and the sensitivity of bringing the scandal of the gospel into that situation as well while bringing aid should inform us on how we do evangelism everywhere. In other words, they say, you know, what we really ought to do is in the name of meeting people where they're at, hold back on the gospel in almost every situation until everybody's completely comfortable with the concept.
No, I don't buy that. I think proclamation, the power of the word converts, and not our wisdom. Now, within that reality, there is a wise time to speak and a wise time to not be so forthright in proclamation and missiological efforts. So I think it's just a matter of churchly wisdom.
Is giving aid, water, food, medicine, blankets, those kind of things, to people in need, is that biblical evangelism, that in itself?
No, not per se. I mean, evangelism means giving the evangelion, the gospel. It means evangelism means proclaiming Christ. And we see often in the New Testament, with Jesus, for instance, where Jesus healed people. Think of the time where he heals the paralytic and says, I tell you, which is easier to say, your sins are forgiven, or rise, get up, and walk? Well, he certainly accomplished both realities in one. in Luke 9, he sends his apostles out to heal and to preach the good news. So the two definitely belong together in the church's life, but that with a great amount of wisdom as situations arise. It's very easy, I think, and this has happened. There's been a great secularization, certainly of the mainline churches, and also deep into Lutheranism, secularizing of the mission of many entities and agencies, and we must be very careful that we don't begin to confuse the gospel with the handing out of food and material aid. That's not the gospel.
With only about a minute here to respond. It was noted in the Time magazine article, and with the caveat that you mentioned that we're not quick to judge anyone in this respect, especially at a time like this, the website for Samaritan's Purse had read that they are preparing to help thousands of suffering families in the name of Jesus Christ. As of the publishing of the Time magazine article, Samaritan's Purse website had dropped the last six words, in the name of Jesus Christ. What do you make of that change?
I don't know. I'm not going to judge them or their motivations without knowing the facts, and even then I would be reticent to do so. I think if Christians are doing these acts of aid as such, say an individual church, evangelical Christians, they ought not hide the fact who they are, and if they tell people what their motivation is in doing that, that's what they should do. So I really don't know enough to judge that issue.
Pastor Matt Harrison, thank you very much for being our guest again on Issues Etc.
Hey, thanks for having me, Todd. I look forward to being with you again sometime in the future.
Pastor Matt Harrison is Executive Director of LCMS World Relief and Human Care. You can check out the website for Lutheran Church Missouri Synod World Relief by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section there, you'll find a direct link to Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief. The website address again is issuesetc.org. When we come back from this break, I'd like your reaction to this controversy surrounding these Christian aid groups in Iraq. Give me a call during this break. What do you think? Is Samaritan's Purse acting wisely by saying, look, what we need to do first and foremost is get people fed, but of course we're going to have to do our thing, and that is do evangelism there. And it might harm us in the short run or the long run, but we've got to do it. Or would you advocate taking a more strategic approach? In other words, saying there's a time to speak and a time to remain silent, and maybe now the time is to fill people's mouths and stomachs and get them warm and well-fed and pave the way for the gospel to be preached to them. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can give me a call during this break, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. By the way, in the third hour of the program, after this 25 minutes of open lines that follows, we'll be talking with Bob Lico, co-founder of Discernment Ministry International based in Detroit, about some charismatic issues, about healers who are sick, about polemics, whether or not false doctrine is really that big of a deal. We'll be right back.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ historically reliable? And what can we learn about this miraculous event from extra-biblical sources? You'll find answers to these questions with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, the very first Easter. The book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this book on our website, issuesetc.org, and click the What's New section, issuesetc.org. The very first Easter is written by Dr. Paul Meyer, professor of ancient history at Western Michigan University. It's a great Easter gift for your children or your grandchildren. The book costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. The very first Easter, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House at 1-800-325-3040.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. There's a class action lawsuit in Texas in which women that have aborted their babies are charging the health department with not enforcing the law. Almost 150 women are involved, complaining that they've suffered everything from depression to sterility because of it. Now a judge is calling for mediation. Terry Phillips has details.
Attorney Alan Parker of the Texas Justice Foundation says the goal is to get the state to enforce the regulations already on the books.
But in fact, women are not told what the nature of abortion is, and they are not adequately informed of the severe and often psychologically devastating consequences of abortion. And the abortion doctors have a tremendous financial incentive not to tell women what the true risks of the procedure are.
Carol Everett of the Heidi Group was the only anti-abortion representative on the panel that wrote the regulations. She says the Texas abortion facility regulations are a good news, bad news situation.
Texas today has the strongest abortion clinic regulations in the nation, and yet ours are less than any other day surgery facility.
What that means is even Texas veterinary regulations are more stringent than those for abortion clinics. But the mediation isn't about the rules, it's about enforcement.
They take a very minimalist approach. When our clients actually filed complaints with them, they simply closed the case without any investigation whatsoever.
Despite physical danger and long-term emotional perils that come with abortion, clinics get a pass on oversight.
But the truth of the matter is, this is still the largest unregulated legal industry nationwide.
Another judge will mediate between the women that were harmed and the state. For Family News and Focus, I'm Terry Phillips.
Another issue on the table, will the state require that cases of sexual abuse of a minor be reported? For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Compromise in our life starts out very, very small.
On the next Focus on the Family, Barry Minko talks about his imprisonment.
Every one of our cases, we can pinpoint the first compromise in our life, and it wasn't a big one.
Hear one man's story of deception and compromise, and how, by God's grace, he learned the importance of maintaining integrity in the workplace. That's coming up on the next Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Is the death and resurrection of Christ historically reliable? Find out with the new children's book, The Very First Easter, published by Concordia Publishing House. 1-800-325-3040. The Very First Easter is the Issues Etc. book of the month for April. 1-800-325-3040. You can find out more about this book on the internet, issuesetc.org, and click What's New? The Very First Easter by Dr. Paul Meyer, our Issues Etc. book of the month for April.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., our final in a series with Dr. Ken Sherb of Zion Lutheran Church in Moberly, Missouri. Myth or Faith is the series. Tomorrow, myths about evangelism. Dr. Ken Sherb is our guest. Also tomorrow, the Passion of Jesus Christ in the Psalms. Dr. Tim Seleska of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis joins us tomorrow on Issues Etc. to talk about that. It's Open Lines Issues Etc. for the next 25 minutes. For the first half hour, we spent some time talking with David Van Bima of Time Magazine regarding Franklin Graham, Samaritan's Purse, and the International Mission Board for the Southern Baptist Convention and their intentions in Iraq as they bring aid, also to do some evangelism there as well. And then we had reaction from Pastor Matt Harrison of LCMS World Relief, saying that there is a time to speak and a time to remain silent, but this should not be the norm for evangelism. This is the exception rather than the rule, but there are exceptional cases, and this may be one of them. What do you think about doing evangelism while you bring aid to the Iraqi people? Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Franklin Graham is in the news for that, of course. He's remained more or less in the news, very seldom going beneath the surface of the water for about the last year and a half, and in particular since he made his statements about Islam in public. And I was very clear during the time he was making those statements to commend him for making the statements and not backing down. So many had made statements. Jerry Falwell had made some statements about the nature of Islam as a religion, its propensity toward evil and terrorism, and so had Pat Robertson. Both of them, after making their statements and catching heat for them, had backed down, apologized, and then made the statements again, and then backed down and apologized. Franklin Graham has been steadfast I mean, we can admire him, whether you agree with him or not. You can admire him at least for that. We also brought you the Reverend Jerry Vine's comments, which were made here in St. Louis 1 year ago when the Southern Baptist Convention met together as a church. And he made these statements in an opening worship service having to do with whether or not the God of Christianity and the God of Muhammad were the same God. He also talked about the propensity of the Islamic religion toward acts of evil. Well, given that context, there are Muslims at the Pentagon who are deeply incensed by what they say is an insensitive invitation to evangelist Franklin Graham, who has called Islam an evil religion. This is a Reuters story I'm reading from, to preach on Good Friday at the Defense Department. I was not aware of the fact that the Defense Department had any kind of services, but given the fact that it's a huge complex, I imagine they do have a chapel and a chaplain. Well, Franklin Graham has been invited for Good Friday. In letters to the Pentagon's chaplain office this week, Muslim office workers complained strongly about Graham's plan to lead prayers on Friday, one of the most religious days in the Christian calendar. And it should not miss our attention, by the way, that Friday is also the weekly holy day of prayer for Muslims. The letters urged officials to find, quote, a more inclusive and honorable religious leader to take his place. A spokesman for Graham, son of the Reverend Billy Graham and head of the Minneapolis-based Evangelist Association in his father's name, and also founder and president of Samaritan's Purse, confirmed on Tuesday that he would attend Friday service, where prayers were likely to focus on U.S. military actions in Iraq, a largely Muslim country. Quote, as far as Friday is concerned, the Reverend Graham will be attending prayers at the Pentagon, said spokesman Jerry Bloom, adding Graham was in a board meeting on Tuesday and was unlikely to comment personally on the issue. The Pentagon was not immediately available to comment on the complaints, but a spokeswoman told the Washington Post that Christian employees had requested Graham as a guest preacher and the chaplain's office would not rescind the invitation. If a Jewish group was to invite a particular speaker, they'll do that. Muslims hold services here too. The army chaplains are absolutely non-judgmental of any faith that soldiers want to follow, said the army spokesman Martha Rood Tuesday in the Washington Post. And this goes along, of course, with the context of Franklin Graham's 2001. This was on the anniversary, or very shortly after September 11th, when he called Islam a very evil and wicked religion. I don't know. I guess you could understand a Muslim's concern about that, especially if he's been an outspoken critic of their religious position. He comes to speak at the Pentagon, but then, of course, anyone can come and speak at the Pentagon. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Roland's calling from his car. Roland, welcome to Issues Etc.
Pastor, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Well, you know, next to my wife, you're probably the best person to help me organize my thoughts, so help me understand this. As you're discussing the aid and the gospel, what I kept thinking of was Christ feeding the 5,000 and the crowd wanting to make him king. And I'm wondering, what kind of a Christ do we present when there's a quid pro quo with our aid?
Now, do you believe that it's automatically a quid pro quo situation when we come in with aid desperately needed, but also come in bearing the gospel message?
You're a mother with three children who are starving. You have no hope to keep them alive other than to take the food from that organization that's also proclaiming the gospel. What do you think?
Do you think that's inherently the term that has been used in the press is a coercive situation? What do you think?
You know, I would much rather give them a full belly, acting as Christ to them, and then share the gospel with them afterwards. I think you're going to get a more genuine hearing after the fact. It's sort of like the Salvation Army. You know, before they give you the soup, you've got to sit through the sermon. And if you've ever witnessed one of those events, you kind of wonder how many are actually paying attention to the sermon.
Roland, you've struck upon something that I think is very valuable here, and I thank you very much for the call.
Sure.
Roland has landed upon something that I think is important, and it's not a matter of either or, and I think Matt Harrison was very clear on this as well. It's not a matter of either or. The question is, It really comes down to that kind of crass, which comes first? Do we give in any way the impression that the aid, the help, the food, the water, the medicine, the blankets come at a price? Or do we first give all of these things, and then when they are given, and as Roland says, when a person has a full stomach, then, so that no one can misunderstand that this is coercive, that this is a quid pro quo, then we speak the gospel clearly. Is it that simple? Which comes first? Or could there be a situation in which even after you fed someone, they might say, yeah, but, you know, they're still going to interpret this as the price they had to pay or something like that, even to listen to the gospel afterwards. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. How would you do this? Okay, let's put yourself in the aid worker's position. Everybody wants to theorize, but if you were the person with the food, with the water, with the medicine and the blankets, if you were there on the ground in Iraq with people who've been starving, and we're not just talking about people who go on hungry, we're talking about people who have been starving in some cases, coming to you, have you seen what it's like when the first soldiers brought aid into those southern cities? They couldn't hand it out fast enough. But you were in that position, and you were from a Christian aid organization. How would you go about it? Which comes first? How would you, if you feel the need while you're there to bring the gospel to these people, and there are people thronging you for food, how would you go about it? The call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I imagine there might be someone who says, look, first priority must always be the proclamation of the gospel. Therefore, we will go and preach the gospel, and we'll give them aid, but the first thing we've got to do is make sure they hear the gospel. Do you have any concerns about that? I am usually a very strong advocate, especially in our well-heeled, affluent American society, that a church who tries to take care of your needs, your felt needs, or your other needs, before it introduces you to Jesus, is wasting your time. But those are people who show up to church having had a full breakfast, who came there in a car whose gas tank was full, whose children are not starving. All right? I think it is a sin, a crime, for a church to withhold the gospel from people to meet their felt needs. In Iraq, we're not talking about felt needs. We're talking about life and death needs. Is this the exception where we would feed first and preach second so that no coercion and no charge of coercion could be brought? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines. We have about 10 more minutes left in open lines. Plenty of time to call to react to this story and to answer those questions. The call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let me just make it as clear as I can. The rule would be gospel comes first. Gospel up front. Jesus, the message of the Christ and Him crucified, first and foremost. But when we're dealing with our neighbor who has no other real pressing needs, right? And I'm not talking about low self-esteem, folks. I'm not talking about, my finances are in some disorder. Those are needs that can wait until the gospel's preached, right? I mean, a person isn't going to go to hell because they can't balance their checkbook. But if a person is going to die, unless you feed them, you kind of want to keep them alive so they can hear the gospel, right? What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Mark is calling from his car. Mark, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Pastor Todd, if you were going to go over to Iraq to give them aid, and there was a young lady who was almost indecent, you know, because her attire was worn, they're poor, and they've been through a war, would you give her a new dress or preach the gospel first?
You mean if she's nearly naked?
Yeah. Well, just to push an example, an analogy.
I think I would, if you want my honest off the cuff answer, I would clothe her.
Well, I think maybe that's also kind of the almost an analogy for this same situation. You know, as your guest was saying, it's kind of a wisdom issue. And this is not to say that the gospel's not important, because, I mean, it is. It's the most important thing of all. But it's a wisdom issue as to how the gospel's going to be accepted, and it's a wisdom of issue of how we're going to be treating people. And if the need is that desperate, the physical need, the need, I think, has to be met.
Mark, thank you very much. Now, we should be honest, however, and this is something that Pastor Harrison pointed out as well, fully honest in our intentions about what we are there for and who we are and why we are doing what we're doing. See, the Christian goes and feeds and clothes and gives water. And, you know, I cannot help but think of the sheep and the goats in this situation. But the Christian goes there for an entirely different reason than other humanitarian groups go. We go because we have been forgiven by Christ. We go because the cross is the reason we go. And that cross has to figure into this situation somehow. We go as bearers of the cross, as Christ bearers. Sandy's calling from Alton. Sandy, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to comment about your discussion. I really believe that I think we first must demonstrate Christ and then proclaim Christ when we are looking at people who have had nothing but degradation and torture. They're not even clean people. I mean, I don't mean unclean in a spiritual sense. I'm talking bodily. You know, we can't even imagine that, or to make any kind of comparison with felt needs of fat and sassy American Christians who, kind of need their ego stroked, their emotions kind of calmed, relationships healed. There's just no comparison, to churches that will draw people in our Western, type of religion, or Christian churches, and then use a gospel message. I think in these crises that we have seen, we demonstrate Christ as a matter of mercy first.
Sandy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So she's talking about this being the exception, an exceptional way of beginning evangelism. Not that feeding people is evangelism. Believe me, it isn't. Unless Jesus Christ and Him crucified is clearly portrayed, you're not talking evangelism. That's what Pastor Harrison said before. Evangelism is bringing the evangel, the gospel, to people, Jesus Christ. Now, I made the comparison. That's why Sandy talks about fat and sassy Americans who need their ego stroked. But you know there are people, and you know what really chafes me about this? Is in the churches where they say, let's meet people's felt needs first and we'll get to Jesus later, and they use kind of this kind of logic that the exception becomes the rule. I wouldn't mind that so much, I guess. I mean, I really wouldn't mind it so much if they eventually did get around to Jesus Christ. Jane is calling from her car. Jane, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. This isn't exactly like what you're talking about, but when the Hindu temple was firebombed, and I'm out working close to it right now, I kept wanting to find someone from there. So in Sam's day, I found a man, and he looked like he was from India. And I said, are you from India? And he said, yes. And I said, as a Christian American, I want to tell you I am very sad that someone did that to your place of worship. I said, I would disagree with your religion as you would with mine, but in America we have the freedom to do this. And he just said, oh, thank you, and went on and on. And then I didn't see him anymore. And as we were leaving the store, he said, ma'am, I want to tell you that your children, your children's children will have a good attitude because of you. And I said, I would like you to know that my attitude comes from my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. So it just kind of happened that way, but I wasn't intending. And, I really didn't give the whole gospel. But don't you think it's just kind of individual situations?
Well, yeah, although I don't want that to become the rule either. But, Jane, it didn't just happen. Evangelism doesn't just happen. Evangelism is God's work, and the reason that you were given an opportunity to even in that oblique way bring Jesus Christ to that Hindu is because God arranged it. You see, we tend to think of this as evangelism as our work. We got to go out and find the prospects. We got to go out and cultivate the prospects. We got to go out and work the fields. And we're getting absolutely no help from the big guy upstairs because he's just left us with all this work to do. We got to network with people and discern people's felt needs. And for heaven's sakes, it's a daunting task. That's not how evangelism works, folks. God does all the work. He's the one that provides the bread, the seed for the sower and the bread for the eater. His word just comes raining down out of heaven and doesn't return until it does what he sent it to do. Do we take that seriously? You see, then the urgency for preaching the gospel takes on a different cast. It's not an urgency of how much work we've got to do to get it done. The urgency is, how far can we spread it? How far can we spread it? If we have it to bring, how far can we spread it? Everyone needs to know about this. So we don't concentrate on the few, trying to cultivate the few perfect prospects for the gospel. We preach the word and plant it home to them who like or like it not. And we're like that reckless sower who just tosses it everywhere, even onto the rocky soil. Then he goes to sleep, wakes up the next morning, and watches it grow. And God gives the increase. Gene is calling from Highland. Gene, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Pastor. I'm real sorry that I missed the conversation. I just tuned in as you were answering the question about, you know, what first, gospel first or food first. And when I was training for social ministries, one of the things they said that has stuck with me since then is that a person can't hear the gospel if their stomach is growling. And so you first have to feed the tummy so that they can hear. And that's what I was thinking of. And I also wondered if anybody brought up the Good Samaritan. You know, he just picked him up and took care of him and didn't preach to him until later. And I'm sure the fellow wanted to know who this was who took care of him.
Gene, thank you very much.
Sure.
I'm also thinking about the Epistle of James, where we had an evangelism teacher in the seminary who used to say, you know, we don't do evangelism. Part of evangelism is understanding where the person to whom we're going to proclaim the gospel is at. It's a big part of it. It's important. There's no such thing as cookie-cutter evangelism. It's true. James says, you know, what good are you if you say to your neighbor, oh, God bless you, be warm and be fed. Now get out of my way so I can do some evangelism. Tina's calling from Webster Groves. Tina, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, you guys. How are you?
Very well.
Good. Todd, the story of the sheep and the goats, and Christ says when you've done it to the least of these, and I don't know that if he puts a precedence there, whether the word comes first or the deed comes first. But I'd like to say to Samaritan's Purse, if they should, if others have done their job properly before Samaritan's Purse comes in, then I think the gospel is being rightly proclaimed.
What do you mean by that?
If the United States has come in and met humanitarian needs, then I think that Samaritan's Purse can come in and do their work as well.
Tina, thank you very much. You know, that would be the ideal situation, is that, you know, the Christian aid groups would not only be feeding people, but that everyone would be, God would be working these two kingdoms together for the sake of the proclamation of the gospel, so that even non-religious, completely secular humanitarian groups could also be filling people's stomachs, and maybe Samaritan's Purse could do a little bit more of what its proper work is in the proclamation of the gospel. Now, don't get me wrong, folks. I am not saying that we should hold the gospel back. I think Jesus needs to be first and foremost right out front. So that as people are being fed, as we are putting water and food into their hands and blankets around them and everything else that needs to be done to get these people simply back up to a level of subsistence so they can live, Christ must be up front. But But we dare not give anyone the impression because that there is any kind of quid pro quo going on here. We must be keenly aware of the fact that there will be a tendency for people to see this as a bait and a switch. And we must avoid it at all costs. But not at the cost of withholding the gospel, ever. Never at the cost of withholding the gospel. Then, what are we doing? We're doing nothing more than what the UN could do, sending their humanitarian aid. Then we've lost our salt. The salt's lost its flavor. And feeding people, while it might keep people alive, is a great endeavor, but if it's not done for the sake of the gospel, then we could just as well leave other people to do that. Why do we want to avoid any impression of this being a quid pro quo, or this being coercion, or this being bait and switch? Why? Not because people think ill of us. I don't care if people think ill of us. I don't care if people think ill of Franklin Graham or Samaritan's Purse. But because people, it would harm the message of the gospel. This is the heart of it, folks. What Christ did at the cross, he did, and he gives freely. Without coercion, without cost, without a requirement that you commit or sit and listen to the sermon, he gives it freely. And maybe by giving people the food and the water and the blankets and everything else that they need freely, along with the gospel, they will see exactly the kind of Jesus we're talking about, who gave his life freely, who gives the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation, freely, as a gift, no strings attached. That's why we want to avoid a quid pro quo situation. That's why we want to avoid people thinking we're acting coercively. That's why we want to avoid people thinking that we're baiting and switching or putting a cost on this food. Because whether Christians are preaching the gospel or feeding their neighbor, they're doing it for precisely the same reason. Freely you have been given, freely you have received, now freely give. The church doesn't just have food and water to give. We do have that to give. And thanks be to God that he's made us so fat and wealthy that we can. And it doesn't even put a dent in our daily meals. Not even a dent. We have something far greater to give, and it's just as free. In fact, it's as free as it can be, because it has been given by God's grace, without any merit or worthiness in us, the very life of Jesus given for all men, the Iraqis too, on the cross, so that life and salvation and the forgiveness of sins might be ours for free, with no strings attached. When we come back, we'll talk about some charismatic issues.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.